This is the Mental Metal Podcast, and I am your host, Coach Matt Toman. I'm a former athlete, teacher, coach, and athletic director that switched careers after surviving cancer and a stroke in the fall of 2020. But I'm also a dad of a son and a daughter that were successful high school athletes that went on to college. Now I use that experience along with my ICF coaching certification when helping teams, coaches, and athletes from all over the country. Each week, I will pose a specific question that will help coaches of all types better understand mental toughness. In the Mental Metal Podcast, coaches will learn to help their athletes overcome adversity without being the adversity they need to overcome. And welcome back to the Mental Metal Podcast. I'm your host, Coach Matt Toman. I'm here with my guest today, Coach Joni Nightingale of the Girls Deer Creek Mackinac Lady Chiefs. And that, I mean, this is a great, I'm really excited about this one. This is a program and a district I used to work in. It's a program that I used to coach. My daughter was in this program, and Joni is, Coach Nightingale was, when I was an AD, she was a coach under me. And I was like, I could remember, and you can, maybe you can tell your side of this, but I can remember being like, Joni, you're good at this coaching thing. You need to, like, you need to keep going up because I think you'll do really, really well. And then I felt that really strongly. I was like, Joni, you're going to do so good. You've got a great background. You're so good with the girls. You're going to do so well. And then you break, and then fast forward. And the last 3 years, you've broken the school record for wins all 3 years. Right? So I don't know how else to say this other than I was right. Right? I mean, I'm going to take 100% credit for the fact that you're a really good coach when that is not true. So
that's for sure.
I think it's awesome. And it's a program that historically has struggled a little bit. I mean, they only set the school record for wins when my daughter was there in 2018-19 season. I think they won, what, 16 or 18, right?
I think 19 was
something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should remember. But regardless, you've taken a program that, a school that is volleyball centric, right? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I'm not against one or the other, but we used to struggle to get the girls out to even play basketball, and now it's the thing there. So that's a big long introduction, but welcome to the show, Coach.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So tell me some of your background into basketball.
All right. Well, this is kind of interesting, fun little tidbit. So I started my playing competitively my sixth grade year, but it was on the boys team was my first year playing because they didn't think that we would have enough sixth grade girls to have a program. And so, you know, Title IX and whatnot, they opened up the boys season, which was first. I grew up in a small town called Leland, which is Northern Illinois. And so there were six of us, six girls. We played with the boys. Well, then we ended up having enough girls. So we got a double season in the first year that I got to play. So
now be honest, there's a chance you were probably the tallest person on the team.
Three of us, three girls were tall on the team. I mean, the boys grew later, but
I know.
it was pretty equitable in playing time. Like, I think there were 15 people on the team, and so everybody got a quarter, and then the fourth quarter they would mix it up with people. So, I mean, the boys weren't super thrilled to have us around, I don't think.
No, just I'm sure not.
It cut into the time that they got to see, but that was a cool experience to get to start, I think. Then I went to Leland High School. I had a our high school team was pretty successful. We got out of our regional every year in high school. It was in the two class system, so we were really small town of 800. And my senior year, actually, we ended up co-oping with just not the school, but the basketball program with Earlville, which was a conference rival for us. But it was kind of cool to have like superstars on our team and superstars on their team align and get to play our senior year together. And we got into the sectionals, but never could get out of a sectional at the high school level. Went on to play for Coach Kearns at Millikan University.
That's our other connection, which is awesome, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Blue. And just really learned a ton. It's a historically successful program. Great people. Learned lots of things about being a leader, doing more than just what happens on the court, but being a good person off the court. And really, that's what drew me to Millikan in the first place. Just talking to Coach, and she has so many great life experiences and has built an awesome team around her, and got to play with some of the coolest people in college. So
how did you guys do while you were there? How'd you guys do while you were there? How'd you guys do while you were there?
We won the conference 3 out of the 4 years that I was there. We made it into the national tournament 3 out of the 4 years that I was there. The girls that entered in my senior year, the girls that were freshmen, by the time they were juniors, they won the national championship. And so I feel, you know, that like there's a little bit of pride in knowing that you were like, I was competing against those girls in practice. Like, I taught them what it meant, you know.
Absolutely.
I brought them in, and like, we showed them the way. And so, you know, while that was I think it was 2005 is when they won the national tournament.
Yeah.
And so I graduated in 2003. And so it's just something that we talk about. Obviously, really great friends with girls that were still on the team and that got to see it all the way through to the end. But, you know, what a cool experience.
Oh, yeah. And then when did you start coaching then?
So I moved to Florida for 7 years right out of college. And I was an assistant coach at the varsity level for 3 years down in Florida. And then we moved back, and that was a different experience all on its own. I loved Coach Rachel Freeman was the head coach that I assisted with, and she played basketball in college. We worked together in an elementary building, and then we coached at Terry Parker High School. That was a bit down the road, and that was my first like official coaching experience. But I think I was talking with Mitch Holmgren when I had come to DMAC, and he's like, you're such a big, you know, the distance just a couple chairs down from assistant to head coach doesn't seem like much, but it, you know, there's miles in just what you do from an assistant to a head coach. And you know, he's right in that. So my family's from I have family in the Illinois area, so we moved back after we had my daughter in Florida, just wanted to get close to family. And when I started at DMAC, I taught 4th grade, and I had a 3-year-old at home. I soon became pregnant with my son. And so, you know, coaching wasn't on the forefront of my, you know, to-do list.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And there's always opportunities, right? Like, we're always looking for coaches. And I think I remember having a conversation with Todd Brownlee, who is still the current 8th grade girls coach, and he assists at the high school level, about like, listen, it's really about these girls. Like, you had these kids in 4th grade. These are special mm-hmm. kids. There's not anybody willing to coach. It's been this like turnover rate at the junior high level we're talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is like, that's what he needed to say. It's like, I saw these kids as 10-year-olds and fell in love with them then, and they deserved better. They deserved to have somebody who cared about them, that wanted their success, that wanted to grow a program. And so we're like, okay, let's do this. So yeah. I took on the 7th grade position, and he took on the 8th grade position, and we did that for 4 years. And then in my 4th year,
and you guys had, I mean, again, that's when I was there, and you guys had a lot of success there. It was yeah. a lot of fun, and it was because you could see it coming. Like I was talking about, it was a volleyball school, and it was like, and the volleyball was still good, but it was like, wait a minute, we're changing the perception of what it meant to be a female athlete at our school anyway.
Yeah, and you could feel that it was like
absolutely
a palpable change, and I think a huge part of that was the girls that we had. You know, if you don't have athletes buying in or willing to take risks or to have trust I felt like we were an advantage because Todd, you know, teaches eighth grade. I had these girls in elementary school, so we already had a relationship with them. Like, there was already a connection there. They knew that we cared about them as people. But they were great athletes. They were hard workers, and they were willing to buy into some changes that we were hoping to build on. And yeah, there was a lot of success.
Yeah, and like I said, there was a little bit of, while they were in junior high, there was a little bit of success at the high school level for them to see. Well, you know, it was not like what they're seeing, but I think that's how programs get built. It doesn't, right. It's not one program, it's not one class. It's such a long process.
It is. And I think part of that growth, you know, you were, I don't know if it was maybe my second year at the junior high levels when you were the head coach at the high school level. And then Tad Myers came after yeah. you. And I do know, and then I followed Tad. And so I feel like in that time, something that was important for us at the junior high level, but also for you guys at the high school level, was that this was not just a four-year program. Like yeah. we really wanted to grow this. Then it was like, okay, yes, this is a seventh and eighth plus high school, but okay, let's even look down into our rec kids. Like, we really wanted to grow this program so that girls were excited about the game of basketball, you know, 5 and 6 years old, and then in learning like these fundamentals, the foundations of defense. We were hyper focused on defense and getting that in early, and really looking this as a K-12 program.
Yeah.
And I think that because it was important at multiple levels, and so by the time that I moved up into high school, like, that was just a continuation. Like, yeah. that was a vision that we wanted to continue. Like, this is something important for us, that when I was at the junior high, that both you and Tad had come into our practices
yeah.
and talk to the girls. Obviously, there's camps and things that there's an interaction there. But, you know, we're using the same language. We're talking the same things. We want the same things for our girls. And I think that has been something that we're really just hyper-focused on continuing. That this is a
program as well. Yeah, oh, absolutely. And when you can develop a culture that goes beyond grades and levels and stuff like that, it does so much of the heavy lifting for you, right? Because I mean, you're putting me into there, and I'm telling you, I mean, I did it that year, and it was a struggle. We didn't have any seniors. We had two juniors. Only one of them had much varsity time, and a handful of sophomores. I mean, we got beat a lot, but we were trying to do things, and then to have them see some success over the next couple of years, and then to see that, you know, be a foundation that gets built on and built on and built on. And the problem is, coach, you won 32 games this year. I don't know how many more. I mean, it's a tall order. I know you're gonna hit a limit at some point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. We were open for 36 this year.
I'm sure you were. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
But keep going talking about that. What was your first year? What was that like coming up to the high school then?
So my first year at the high school, I actually assisted under Tad, Coach Myers.
Yeah.
It was the COVID year. So yeah,
that didn't count.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was, we played in like January, February, March. There's no postseason.
Yeah.
But that group of girls was predominantly freshmen and sophomores. We did have one junior. Actually, two juniors that played, and then one of those juniors quit the next year, where we just had the lone senior the following year. So I assisted in that COVID year, and then I was still coaching seventh grade in that COVID year, and that season was after the high school season. But that last group of seventh graders I have been with all along. I had them as seventh grade was there for eighth grade, and then obviously every year at the high school. And so I was not expecting Coach Myers to bow out. Like, I you could sense yeah. there was a good thing going. We were young for sure at the high school level. But again, it was like these kids were just different. Like, these were kids that were cut from a different mold, that had a hardworking mentality. They're good people. And you just knew like that good things were in store. And so I wasn't expecting that summer league day when Coach Myers pulled me aside and was like, listen, I don't think, I think I'm done. I think I know, like, this is the time for me to step away. And I was shocked. But I mean, he's like, I think that if it's something that you, you want to pursue. He's like, I see your face in there. I see you holding back, like, things that when, you know, wanting to say, or, you know, coaching moments. And, you know, I see you interact with the girls. And I think that would be something that you're interested in, that you should pursue that. And so I did, and I took on the head coaching position, and I was lucky enough that Terrence Durbin had been coaching JV for several years. So there was some consistency and there were people who had, you know, he knew the program and you know, what the goals were for the future. And then Todd came on as an assistant, Todd Brownlee, who was coaching at the 8th grade level. And so I felt like this was this super team of people who were aligned on, we just had similar goal, a similar vision. You know, I think that you have to be intentional with your culture. Like, you have to create your culture and, you know, expect that from the group, communicate to your kids what you want, and you have to live that, and you have to reward that, and you have to demand it out of your kids. But if you don't do that, I think that you have a culture by default. And
culture exists.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Whether it's intentional or unintentional, culture exists.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
So let's dive into the weeds a little bit, right? What is it that you're intentional? Because, I mean, so your first year there, what was your record? Your first 20,
as head coach, first record was 21-13.
Okay, so that was every year that you've been there, you've set a school record for wins. So, well, you know, so I think that that's worth
that with the most style. I will say
I would agree.
Our Addie Swinsky, who was a junior at the time, we drew up a play, and it was really to get a look for her or another girl, Megan Krell. Addie got a shot. She probably got fouled in the shot, but it was an on-call. You know, it's the end of the game. And Lexi Cottingham was in a position. She grabbed the rebound, put it in, and we, you know, that was our game tying record. And I was like, that's a good statement on your freshman year, Lex.
It really is. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
So, again, I want to get into the weeds a little bit, because I think that I know every coach I come on is like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to say. Well, you know, you're the only coach I've ever had, that high school head coach, that's, you know, set a school record for every year that they've coached. And again,
just
right?
Three.
It's only 3 years, but I would take it, right? So what? Talk to me about, when you talk about being an intentional culture, what is it you try to be intentional about? What are the notes I should be taking?
Well, I don't know about if notes are something for me that's important. Like, I am a connections person. Like, I feel, you know, when I want to be at practice because I love the game of basketball and I like to compete. But most importantly, I like these girls and I care about them as people. And I think when you give that, you know, you pour that kind of love in to a program, then they can't help but feel that and then reciprocate that. But I've always been kind of a glasses half full kind of person. And I think that you have to have that unwavering belief that you can maximize the potential that you have. And so really weeding out any kind of negativity, and I'm not talking about, you know, just having a poor attitude about towards other people. But I found, like, with our girls, they're the hardest critics on themselves. So really changing the way that they talk to themselves or about themselves, the way that they looked at practice as, you know, ways to get better. And it's not like, oh, I have to do this, you know, we're going to have to do this drill again or whatever. But really, to me, it was about the attitude of, you know, we're going to set really high goals and we're going to believe that we can achieve those goals. And we are going to do it with an optimism that it's going to happen. We're going to prepare ourselves for sure. But just having that, you know, I'm not going to let you say that, oh, I'm terrible at this, or I'm not going to let you say, you know, I don't feel like doing it today. Well, sometimes you got to fake that. So really, I feel like the attitude, having that, no excuses. I don't want you to whine. I don't want you to blame yourself or anybody else we're not complaining. Like, nobody wants to be here and experience that. And so I really feel like the attitude is where we started. And again,
I think that's a great distinction you make about not going to allow you to blame anyone. And I think that most coaches, most people would be like, hey, look, we cannot have athletes blaming others, right? We're just, it doesn't do any good. It's not a good, being a good teammate. It's not the right culture. But you make it go a little bit further and say, we're not going to let you blame yourself too. And I think that a lot of times we allow that as coaches. We're like, well, it's okay. They let them blame themselves a little bit. It's so that it's a motivator, but I feel like it's such a short-term motivator and it does more harm than good.
Yeah. And I think that's a fine line. Like, I want our kids to accept responsibility for things, like, but I don't think that they can wear the weight of something is their fault. So yeah. Do I want you to take, you know, you didn't play defense there and you let somebody drive through the gate. Like, that was your responsibility, but you are not to blame for us losing that game.
That's the difference. It's the difference in connotation for the words. And, you know, just because you didn't live up to your responsibility on a play or, you know, the way you play defense in a situation or on a possession doesn't mean that you are to be blamed for the loss. Right.
Right.
And I think that that's, so it's, are we, it might feel like we're splitting hairs a little bit, but I'm telling you, there's a big difference in how it makes an athlete feel moving forward.
I would agree.
Mental Metal Coaching is driven by a passion for sharing knowledge and experience that will allow athletes and coaches to grow, play, and live in a positive way. We offer a range of coaching and professional development services. First and foremost, we offer individual mental coaching for athletes, and it's easily the most efficient and effective way to help athletes replace fear and anxiety with positivity and confidence. Mental Metal Coaching has helped middle school setters to high school lacrosse middies to D1 offensive linemen. If you have an athlete that needs to improve their mindset and athletics, mental coaching is the answer. We also offer team coaching, which uses the same concepts as individual mental coaching, but applies them in a group setting. Team bonding outings are great, but they do nothing to address the thoughts and feelings that can derail a team. Team coaching does address that, and it's a great option for helping your team grow. Finally, Mental Metal Coaching offers social, emotional learning, professional development programs for educators and coaches. There are self-paced online programs, there are virtual coaching options, and even in-person seminars available. This PD will help increase the mental health of your staff and eventually your student athletes and the culture of your school. All of the Mental Metal Coaching programs have the same goal. Our mission is to help athletes and coaches develop a resilient and spirited mindset that will help them confidently face any obstacles or challenges they seek, regardless of their situation. If you would like to see the same in your athlete, your team, and your staff, contact Coach Toman for more information. And honestly, I think it helps. And that was, I'm sure, just a mention there with Tad, Coach Myers, and him stepping down. He's a very selfless guy, and I'm sure that he saw the ability in you, and he saw what you could do with those. With those female athletes, having been a female athlete, and that the connection you have with them is more than what, you know, Tad could have or what I could have had.
Right.
For a lot of reasons.
Right.
One being, I work with enough female athletes to know that they can tend to be harder on themselves than a lot of the guys who are oblivious.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. Yeah.
I'm not trying to be sexist, and I'm not trying to say it's 100% one way or the other, but there's a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember some of the girls saying in the first year, like, just little things, like they would bring up, like, gosh, it's so nice to have a girl coach. And I was lucky enough. I had some phenomenal male coaches in my high school career, but I had some really strong, awesome female coaches in my junior high, and then playing at the collegiate level. And it isn't, you know, again, it's like you said, it's splitting hairs. It's not saying that somebody does it better than the other. It is just different. And I think there's a real need for girls to have female role models or people that are coaching them that come at it with an experience that is exactly like theirs, that they bring a lot to the table, that they lived what it was like being a female athlete. So,
yeah, I think that I'm going to tread lightly here on this. I'm going to say, like, I think that you had some success as an athlete, and I know you and we're friends, and I know that you handle yourself the right way. I'm sure that whatever internal demons you've probably had them when you were playing, right? Oh, and I'm sure you did, right? And I'm sure that you've probably used that as a way to empathize with your athletes, and you understand how hard that can be. Where I need to be careful treading light is, just because you're a female coach and we're a female athlete doesn't mean you automatically are good at that. Because I know that it can go the other way. If you haven't processed that and realized that other, like, you could just as easily, Joni, say, hey, I dealt with that and you have to deal with that too, right? It made me tougher, and you got it right. I don't think it's just a given that, because you're a female coach and used to be a female athlete, that you will do it the right way. I think you have to give yourself some, I think we want to give you some credit for doing it the right way.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So building that culture, keeping it going. I want to make sure and bring out the point that your first year there, you got the 21 and 13. I want to talk about what you noticed. You actually brought me in to work with that team. And I don't know what you saw from it, but I absolutely loved it. I was just getting going into coaching, and I was just getting into the team coaching. And I had this idea that I could come in and work with a team. And I thought this would be something really cool to do. And I've done it with a lot of teams now. But that was the first team I worked with. And I don't know what you saw, but it went so much better than I thought it was going to.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it was one of the greatest groups of girls, to be completely honest. But what I saw from it was, I thought it was one of the things that I thought was great is, I believe that it takes a village of people to help kids find success. And, you know, that's going to come from their coaches in the athletic arena, but it's also going to come, through their teachers, through their parents, through community members, through just people that they look up to. And so I think the more positive influences we can throw at our kids, or, you know, the people that they can go to as a mentor, the better. So that in and of itself was already a winning factor, I felt like, for our girls. But, I think that you had maybe some kids that, bucked the idea of, I'm going to have to come and, you know, talk about my feelings or talk about like how, I think of this program, or, you know, am I going to have to, you know, share with someone that's maybe not my best friend things that I wouldn't share if they weren't my best friend, you know? So I'm not saying that you didn't, you know, face some.
Oh, there's always awkwardness. Yeah. There's always awkwardness there. Right. Always. Yeah.
But I think the girls really loved the fact that it was, like, coaches were not in those meetings that you met. It was something that they had on their own. And I think that allowed them to speak a little bit more freely. They knew that you weren't reporting back to us that, you know, Addie said this or McKenna said that. Like, that was something that was sacred for them, in a safe spot for them to get some learning, but also do some sharing and growing together as a team. One of the exercises that was, I don't know, maybe early on in your work with them, was for them to come up with like a team slogan, something that they felt. And I remember Addie coming out of that session. She's like, well, you know that we're not supposed to tell you what goes on in there. I was like, okay. And she's like, but we came up with the slogan today.
Yeah.
And that was hard work is our flex. And I just felt that, man, does that not epitomize what these girls are about? That they are the hardest working kids here on the court, but off the court and in the classes, in the classroom and in, you know, in the weight room. So this is a little side note, but Coach Myers has done a fantastic job with the entire high school at DMAC of just creating this culture of strength and conditioning in at PE, not just for our athletes, but especially for our athletes and boys and girls alike. And so, you know, they're hardworking in the weight room. They put in time on their own. We're getting to the point where we're expecting them to, you know, make good choices about their sleeping habits and making sure that they're, you know, eating the right things and drinking all the foods, like all those things. But, you know, to have a slogan like hard work is our flex, I just thought epitomized what we wanted of them, but what they were.
Yeah. A couple things about that. One, the fact that something that came from a session and is now it's on your wall now, right? In your team locker room, right?
It's in the wall in the locker room. It's on the back of t-shirts that we, you know, have a t-shirt from this year's conference championship. We put on the back of our t-shirts. Like it is a statement of who we are for sure.
The amount of pride I get from that is like, it's just awesome to me. Just so you know, I don't know if I've told you this, but just how that exercise works, it's called an experiential value. All right. So it all starts with them. They've got a piece of paper there. And I ask them a few questions about what I asked them, because I remember this. What does DMAC girls basketball mean to you? Or what's your favorite moment from that, from all that you've done? And I give them 5 to 10 minutes. They do some writing. Right. And then they share it with somebody. They find out what they have in common. Right. And then those two share it with two more and they find out what they have in common. Right. And then eventually they have a spokesman from like two or three groups talk about what they had in common. Right. And I'm up there on a whiteboard, just whatever they say, we write all over there. And then we just have this group coaching conversation about it, about what this means to them, and they find out that because kids, you know, struggle to look behind their, you know, past their own nose, right?
Right.
Is that a lot of their experience is the same. A lot of the thing that they have pride in is the same. A lot of the, what they valued was the same, right? Mm-hmm. And the experiences. And then we just talk about it until we came. And then I can remember it was like, we had some words up there and we were just struggling to get the slogan. And it was Addie. I remember she was like, she goes, it's hard work is our flex. And the words were up there. And she just like, it was just like, and it was like the Red Sea parting and this, yeah. And it comes, and it, there was no argument. There was no like, oh, it was this. I'm telling you, it came from this group coaching session that they believed. And I mean, and the point of that is I talk to coaches all the time about like, oh yeah, we have a slogan. I'm like, yeah, but did you pick it?
Right.
Or did you just like grab it and put it on a t-shirt? Or is this something these girls believe? Because that's the difference. And that's what group coach. So the idea of group coaching is, the goal is to reveal the system unto itself.
Okay.
Right. So the girls now understand each other better through that conversation. And now they know what that means. And I don't know. I geek out about that stuff now. Right. Because they are connected through a slogan. And now I'm guessing even your girls that come in.
Right.
Buy into it.
I mean, aside from our juniors, every girl that comes into our program was not in that locker room for that session, you know, but it's what you said. It's something that they take a lot of pride in. They know that's what they're known for. They know that, oh, DMAC girls basketball, that's that hardworking team that everybody talks about. They walk with a little bit of an extra swagger and the hallway. Oh yeah. Because they do put in the work. It is earned and they do take pride in it. And because it is now the expectation to how they walk and how they talk and how they hold each other accountable in their talk. And, you know, it's the coolest thing ever when teachers in the high school share stories of our basketball girls. And beyond that, when other programs are contacting our athletic director to say, gosh, what an amazing, like, what a classy program on how those girls carry themselves and how they compete and how they leave it all out there and how, you know, they're hard work. Yeah, they are. They're really great kids. And it's because they recognize something inside themselves and they put words to it and they have a lot of pride in it. And it's something that extends beyond that class of 2021, 2022. Like it's going to move on with future groups. So I think that's cool.
And what's so useful about stuff like that is whenever you're building those ideas and how hard work means so much to them. When we're talking about having those, when you have that voice in your head and it's that negative voice, it's one thing for a coach to say, hey, just stop that voice, right? Okay. But our heads don't work like that. They're always working. So you have to fill it with something.
Right.
Right. And that's where this positive psychology works so well is like, we tend to have that negative voice in our head that blames us, but it's one thing to say, stop it, but what are you going to fill it with? And it has to mean something.
The words that you should be telling yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there's the old school stuff with it. People would just say, oh, just go out there and have fun or play hard. And it doesn't mean anything, right? It's platitudes, right? It has to be actual thoughts, phrases, and actual evidence, right? To be able to build it. So
I think sometimes it can be as subtle as just little reminders when a kid's down on themselves or like, oh yeah, you know, I turned the ball over 7 times in that game. You did. Yeah. And that definitely hurt us, but you know, you also made a 75 foot pass like on the dime to give us, you know, a fast break or, you know, you were matched up against that other team's best offensive player and you held her to 4 points on the game or on the night. Or, you know, we had Saturday practice and you were the first one to show up 30 minutes early to get some extra shots in. Like, yeah, all these things are factors. So yeah, there was a mistake or a series of mistakes and you should be held responsible for that. Like those are things that we want to obviously work on and get better, but that doesn't make you a terrible athlete. You know, we don't want to kick you off the team because you're bringing so many positives in. And I think that now that they're able to see, you know, how they don't want to talk negatively about themselves, they're holding themselves to that positive talk about themselves, but they're also becoming the biggest advocate for their teammates and they're cheering each other on. And so it's no longer me having to say, point out all those things that they're doing well. They have their teammates to do that, or they have their teammates to hold them accountable. And we actually had a coaches meeting this morning. We're doing a mental medal coaches study, and we were sharing just some things about like mindsets in our practices. And so I shared with, we have this drill that everybody will chase layups. I'm sure you know that. Yeah. That was a drill before me. And everybody hates chase layups because, you know, it's exhausting. But it's needed. Right. And I should say that we were rolling with 13 girls in our entire program.
Yeah.
And when you have illness or, injury, that number dwindles down and the less kids that you have in that drill, the more running you're doing. So, this is a drill that all the girls will say is not their favorite. And it used to be when they'd see chase layups on the practice plan, it started out like, this is the worst day ever. Like this practice plan is a 2 out of 10, coach. Oops, I lost my lights here. This practice plan is a 2 out of 10. Like, what are you doing? You're trying to kill us. And, then it kind of morphed into, okay, now I'm going to negotiate with you. We don't want to do chase layups. What if we do, you know, this drill X, Y, Z instead. And then it became, okay, we know we have to do chase layups, but like instead of 5 minutes a hand, can we do it 3 minutes aside? And then it turned into, I just wrapped up postseason conferences with the girls, and I always ask them, at the end, like, favorite drill, least favorite drill. And at least four girls said, like, I don't like chase layups. Like, I want to say that that's my least favorite drill, but I understand why we do it.
Yeah.
Like, it's to condition us. It's because coach doesn't like us to give, like, little baby doll passes in the paint, that we have to make a good outlet pass, that we have to finish when we're tired. Like, they understand the why behind the drill. So it's not even making the top, top two least favorite drills. And I know that sounds kind of trivial, but to me, it speaks to the buy-in that, they get why they're working hard. They're not working hard to impress me or any of the other coaches. They're working hard because that's who they are. Like, that's what they're known for. And they've seen the results of that hard work. So
it's not trivial. The devil's in the details, right?
Right.
Like, it's that, it's hard to want a kid to be like excited about like doing extra conditioning, right? Yeah, that's too much to ask. But if they understand it and say, I don't like this, but I know why we need it. I mean, we'll take that as coaches, right?
100%.
Yeah, absolutely. Metal is a person's ability to face adversity in a spirited and resilient manner. It is a great skill to have for athletics and for life, but it is not something we are born with. If you want it, you have to forge your metal. And if you listen to the Mental Metal Podcast, you already know that, but not everybody else does yet. So help me out by ordering and wearing some sweet The Mental Metal Podcast gear. We've got short sleeve tees, long sleeve tees, and some super comfortable hoodies. Order online today and you can have your gear in no time. But the best part is that every order helps support the show and helps me spread the message that mental toughness is a trait that can and should be built. So find the link in the show notes, order your gear, and start showing that you know how to forge your metal. So,
so you had that first year, 21-13, and then, let's be honest, like you've got a stud now that helps the program too with Dalia DeJesus, but I don't think that's fair to say, I love bringing that up because she's not the overall reason you're having that success, but it sure helps. Right.
Exactly. That's very well put. Like she is a beast and she does deserve the credit that she gets and the accolades that she gets because she is incredibly hardworking and she does put in the extra time and she is gifted. And she's a great teammate and a great leader and all the things. But we don't have the success that we do this year without the Kenzie Knowles and the Lexi Cunninghams and the Keely Zellers and the Elise Hans. Every girl on our team is just as important as the next. And I know that's easy to say as I'm coaching with an all-state player. Like, I'm sure that's like, well, yeah, throw me an all-state player. That'd be great. I know. But something that our girls deserve credit for is they really became masters in their roles this year. And I think it starts with, like, it has to be an open line of communication both ways. Like, I have to share with them where I see them fitting into our team. And they have to be reciprocal of that. Like they have to ask questions if they don't understand, or, have to be honest that they don't see that's a role that they're going to, I ask them, I'm like, do you think that this is a role that you're going to be able to fill out? And it, for whatever reason, because do you think you're not able to, do you think it's too trivial or beneath you? Do you think that you're going to get enough, are you going to feel a sense of accomplishment by being a master at this role? And so I think they have to be honest. It's got to work both ways. We've gotten to the point that I think the girls feel comfortable in reaching out to me. If it's not a set time when we're meeting a one-on-one, but they're like, hey, coach, I need to talk to you afterwards and address those roles, which happened several times throughout our season. I talked with different girls, but we have kids on our team that their job is to go in and set the tone on defense. We take a lot of pride in our defense. It's something we work on every day. I think that's when people think of our program, they think of our defensive effort. And so we have kids that's absolutely their role, is that they need to be a defensive stop. And we have kids like Dahlia that are going to put points on the board. And we have kids that I need to get a rebound. And I want not just a rebound. Well, maybe some kids might be, I'm going to put you in to get a rebound. And some kids, I need you to pull double digit rebounds. And, you know, we have sharp shooters that when I put you in, I need you to shoot the ball and I need you to see the ball going through the net and, you know, not question yourself, because that's going to come back to help us. And I think there were so many, I can pinpoint a game for every one of our kids on, if we don't have them filling that role, then we don't win that game. And I'm talking about if it's a starter or if it was the last girl off our bench, like, we don't win that game if you don't do your job.
Then I see that being a product of, as you said, that communication with you have with your players. If you're not communicating those roles and those expectations, it doesn't happen by accident. It's just like the culture, right? It doesn't happen by accident. To me, the biggest, being so familiar with your program, the biggest example I see of that was, I noticed that, you know, you had Kinsey going to do a lot of the point guard duties this year. And I saw that the first couple games, and I just said, I don't know, coach. I didn't know who your point guard was going to be, but I wasn't sure, because I knew Kinsey well enough to know that she was a little bit, what's the word? Like,
she's not all in.
And that's what's so great about it.
Yeah.
but she was like, she was a very hyper player and, you know, just 100%. 100 miles an hour. And I was like, I'm not sure that's what you want in your point guard, but you clearly had some conversations with her and communicated that to her, because she did a phenomenal job at it.
She really did. And we had a lot of conversations. After summer play, I told Kenzie that she was not our point guard. I said, I don't know what we're going to do, but you're not our point guard. And Kenzie and I have a great relationship, and she is somebody that, she is a straight shooter. She's going to tell you what she's thinking, but she wants that from you in return. Like, she doesn't want you to be passive aggressive. If I have an issue with Kenzie, I talk to Kenzie about it. Yeah. We handle it. And she expects that from her teammates, and she expects that from everybody around her. But I did not think that she was ready. Mostly because I wasn't sure that I could trust her as the coach on the floor. Like, I needed her.
Yeah, and that was my concern. But you clearly, I don't know how you did it, but you did it.
Well, most of the credit goes to her. Certainly wasn't on me. Again, we had a team of coaches, and the players bought into that, and it was not a smooth sailing road. I mean, it was a bit of a roller coaster. But I am harder on her than I am on most kids, and whether that's because of the position or because I know that she can take it, because I think she got a lot tougher this year for sure. She could have been mad at me, but that kid was sprinting over to me on every dead ball, talking about what she saw, looking for adjustments. After every timeout or halftime talk, she's clarifying things. She might have been playing 32 minutes, but she's running extra, full speed ahead. She's facing presses and having to handle the ball, but then we're also asking her to score and distribute. You know, she just really did a great job this year, and I think grew. And also, we tasked, if it wasn't a point guard, if the other team's player was not a point guard, Kenzie was guarding them. Her defensive game grew so much this year, and just really, really proud of that kid. She's a junior this year. Her sophomore season, fouling was an issue. She didn't have great self-control. And then it would be like fouls would come in clumps together. She'd get a foul and a foul and a foul. And she just, I couldn't remember a time that she fouled out, but she did remind me at the end of the year, if there was one game that she fouled out of, at least four games that I could list off the top of my head that she played with four fouls through a fourth quarter and then even into an overtime. So there were times that we had to pull her out to protect her, you know, when she got in foul trouble, but she did a really good job, a much, much better job of, you know, having some control.
Yeah.
And that speaks to her maturity.
And it really is, it's that great example, her, and the way you worked with her, and I know you'll love this, that idea that we, that you and I both love from your coach, Coach Kearns, about it being transformational, not transactional.
Yeah, 100%.
And yeah, it's all the difference, because you didn't just transform her into a point guard. She's a, I dare say she sees things differently now, right? Mm-hmm. You've changed, like she's matured because right. of it.
And you know, a year ago when we were talking in postseason after her sophomore year, she wasn't entirely sure that she was going to stay in the program. You know, mm-hmm. she is a softball first kid. She, I don't know that she's officially announced. She knows where she's going to go play softball. So I'll hold that. I don't know if she's officially announced that yet. And so, like, we respect that she is a stud of an athlete. Most of our girls are multi-sport athletes, and we respect that if they're not basketball first. But, man, does she make our team better, as do all the girls.
Yeah.
You know, even kids that have no aspiration of going on to play basketball or any other sport, they have to know what their role is on our team, and they have to find value in that role. And if they are willing to accept that role and become a master in that role, then, you know, we're winning. So,
yeah, right. Well, you're not just winning games then.
Right. You're much beyond. Yeah. And
much beyond.
I said that so much to, you know, our girls in talking with them after the season was over. It's like, the things that you shined in this year are going to serve you well in beyond the basketball court. I mean, I think that's the coolest thing. And I think, you know, I listened on one of your podcasts, and you were talking about, we should really look at our coach of the year, you know, 20 years
yeah.
after it happens, because that's what it's about. Like, I want these kids to be good people. That's how Coach Kearns recruited me,
yep.
you know, decades ago, saying, like, you know, I'm looking for kids to be good people. I want kids that serve their community and, you know, are willing to go above and beyond. And that's what that's what I want from our kids, is to be leaders. And, you know, to be a leader, you have to serve others. It's not about yourself. And so,
I feel pretty confident that we don't need to fast forward 20 years. I think you're putting out a pretty good product, kid, coach.
Thanks for that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd be remiss. We've glossed over it, but I mean, if you're going to throw a little shout out there that you're actually doing the coaches are doing a little program that I put together. How's that going? I should just ask you off the air, but why would I do that whenever I could ask you how it's going? 'Cause hopefully it's going well.
No, it's great. I mean, I love the community aspect of it. I love the feeling that we have, especially not being in the high school myself. Like, I teach at the intermediate school, which is in a different building than where our high school coaches are and where the girls are. So I like having a community of like-minded people talking about things that are going to help our kids, and ways that we can shine the light on our kids and how we can improve our craft and do better. And I steal ideas from other coaches. And when we have problems or like issues that we want to problem solve together. And so I love that it brings that community together. But we were sharing today. We really like the video aspect of it. We like that, you know, there's some discussion points. There's tools that you have, found over the course of the last couple of years that we can either use with our kids, or they're like self-reflection tools for us.
Yeah.
And so
I think you have to do that. I think you have to do it first, right? It's not just for the athletes, it's for the coaches too.
Right. And some more so for, I mean, you know, like with anything that you try, you're the guinea pig yourself, and maybe I'm not ready to do it on the team yet, because I'm certainly not a master of it myself. And so that practice, you know, power of yet and growth mindset and working to have that positive self-talk all the time. Those are things that are a work in progress. And sometimes you can implement those things with your team as you go. And sometimes, you know, you got to like you said, start with yourself first.
So. Yeah. No, and that's the point. I think it's, I love seeing coaches grow and improve and want to share that with their athletes. All right, coach, we're about out of time. So, you know, my last question is, what did I not ask you that I should have? What did I miss?
I mean, I knew that was your last going to be your last question, and I probably should have prepared myself a little bit more. But something I thought about early on when you were talking and just saying when you had started the you had a year, didn't start the program. You came into the program a couple years before me, and then Coach Myers before you. But just a really kind of a neat thing that it was a good reminder for me. You know, because tradition I feel is important. So. Last season, after we had had postseason success, we had ordered shirts for the Elite Eight, which, you know, I think you got to have a little bit of signage that celebrates your success. So we had gotten these Elite Eight shirts and we were distributing them at the high school. So we set up, it was before a rec game on a Saturday and people were coming in to collect their shirts. And there was this mom, she's currently a mom. She has a seventh grader and she's got two kids in our building, so a fourth and a fifth grader, girls. And she was talking about how, like, she was complimentary of the success of our girls. And a couple of the girls were working with me to hand out shirts and just celebrating our season and what a great thing. And how you guys are just becoming this great name for our community. And we're so excited to support you and cheer you on. But she talked about how when she was a kid, her job wasn't to, you know, to make it into the postseason or win a conference tournament, anything like that, is she needed to play so that there was a program.
Yeah.
Like she was a placeholder in history. I'm going to come out and compete. Never won a game. I think she said maybe won one or two games in a year. But without those people, without the people that served as those competitors just to keep a program alive, I mean, we don't have the success that we do. So I'm thankful that I got to step in when I felt like the program was on this upward trajectory. And we hope to continue and build off those things. But gosh, am I so thankful for people that were around 20, 30 years ago competing so that our girls had a program. Because, you know, we just celebrated 50 years in women's athletics a couple years back. Women have not had the privilege of competing their entire life. And so that is not lost on me. And so to know that we have had people serve roles over the course of time to put us in a position that we are in today, we're very thankful for that.
Yeah. And you're doing it justice too, which is good. So that's how I feel about it and the job you're doing as well. You're living up to it. It's a lot. But you're living up to it and you're doing a great job. So
thanks. Appreciate that, Matt.
All right, coach. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, as I knew it would be. And we'll stay in touch, coach.
Sounds good. Thanks, Matt.
You bet. Mental Metal Coaching is driven by a passion for sharing knowledge and experience that will allow athletes and coaches to grow, play, and live in a positive way. We offer a range of coaching and professional development services. First and foremost, we offer individual mental coaching for athletes, and it's easily the most efficient and effective way to help athletes replace fear and anxiety with positivity and confidence. Mental Metal Coaching has helped middle school setters to high school lacrosse middies to D1 offensive linemen. If you have an athlete that needs to improve their mindset and athletics, mental coaching is the answer. We also offer team coaching, which uses the same concepts as individual mental coaching, but applies them in a group setting. Team bonding outings are great, but they do nothing to address the thoughts and feelings that can derail a team. Team coaching does address that, and it's a great option for helping your team grow. Finally, Mental Metal Coaching offers social, emotional learning, professional development programs for educators and coaches. There are self-paced online programs, there are virtual coaching options, and even in-person seminars available. This PD will help increase the mental health of your staff and eventually your student athletes and the culture of your school. All of the Mental Metal coaching programs have the same goal. Our mission is to help athletes and coaches develop a resilient and spirited mindset that will help them confidently face any obstacles or challenges they seek, regardless of their situation. If you would like to see the same in your athlete, your team, and your staff, contact Coach Toman for more information. Okay, first things first. If you are on YouTube, you're watching, don't adjust your set. Yes, I am the same guy. I just shaved off my beard that was getting a little bit long, a little bit bushy. It's a spring and summer, fall, winter thing for me. First day of spring came around, and that happened to be between me filming with Coach Nightingale and actually doing this follow-up. So first day came around and off it went. So yeah, it's me, still Coach Toman here. But yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about Coach Nightingale, who, as you can tell in that interview, she and I have been good friends for years, and I was her athletic director for a while. And I mean it, whenever she was coming up and starting to coach, I could see something in her that was something that needed, like, I know she needed to move on and take over some bigger programs. And just the rapport she has with kids, the way she leads, but yet challenges. To me, she's this perfect example that I talk about all the time with the really good coaches, challenge, push their players, want the best for them, try to get the most out of them, but express the same kind of love and care, you know, on that same level. Like if you're on this level of expectations, that level of care and love has to be on the same level. They can't be off, right? I think the best coaches are at both levels very high. And that's part of the reason why coaching is so hard. It takes so much out of you to have those expectations, that time, that effort, and that honest love and care for your players. It takes a lot out of a coach, which is why if you get a really good coach, you should really, really express some gratitude for that, because it's hard to do. It's hard on families. Joni especially, she has made that, and we talked about it, she's made the decision to coach away from, and so her kids are off playing basketball in another school and she coaches. And that's hard. That's got to be hard. I think she does it well. But she's a blessing for that program that is near and dear to my heart. It's a program that my daughter went through and that I coached for a while. And Coach Nightingale has taken it. I think that the program was building for a while. There was some really good kids coming through. They had a little bit of success. And that's how success goes. Especially programs, they didn't happen overnight. It builds and you stand on the shoulders of others to get there. But Coach Nightingale was the right coach at the right time to really take it into these very high level stuff. I mean, she keeps, eventually she's going to have a season where she doesn't break the winning record, but I don't know, maybe not next year. She's taken that culture and bolstered it, grown it, and just made it into a really powerful program. It's a phenomenal program to go watch, to play. I love to watch the girls, how hard they play. And she does it with a couple ways. If there's a way that she grows that culture and changes that culture, two ways. First, she does it with care, and she does it with communication. The communication I notice is she is very clear with her athletes on what their roles are. And it's not just telling them, it's communication. It's back and forth about what do you see your role is? Here's what I see. How can we make this work? She has constant communication with those players about what her goals are, what their goals are, what the expectations are. Those girls know what's expected of them. And if they're not living up to it, coach lets them know, and her assistants help. And they, it just, I think that communication is so key. And I've had, you know, I work with a lot of athletes. I've had my kids go through with play different coaches, and I'm not knocking any, I'm not specifically talking about one coach or one other coach, but there's a difference whenever you have a coach that is very clear in communication on what roles are, what expectations are. When those roles are well defined and well communicated, kids are more likely to thrive. They're athletes, and they want to do things that are hard. And if you are telling them what their expectations are and what you want out of them and what you want them to do, and they have these roles and responsibilities, that most of them are going to strive to go get it. And I think of a coach that doesn't do that, if you leave things unsaid or unknown, I think a lot of times kids, and we talked about girls can do this, but guys too, when you think leave things unsaid and unknown, our brains fill in the gaps, right? And usually we start to fill in the gaps with some negative things. Coach must think this about me. I'm not worth this. Or coach isn't going to use me for this. Or coach doesn't want me doing this because I'm not good at it. Right. I think communication is huge. Communicating with your athletes, not being above them. I think that's another big part of it. When you're sitting down, you're having communication with them and talking to them and doing it in the right way. It lets them know you're human. They're human. We're all in this together. It's just a phenomenal feeling. And it's a very good way to grow the culture and change a program. And the other one, she grows that program is the way she cares. And that's what I started at the beginning about how you have to have that care there. And that comes in with the communication as well. It's real clear when Coach Nightingale is working with her players, she shows, lets them know she loves them, lets them know that she cares for them. And then honestly, a thing like bringing me in, when she was talking about how it takes a village, and that's it's not a new idea. It's an old idea. It takes a village, but I think she believes that. She leans on the teacher. She leans on her staff. She leans on her administration, and she had enough care to say, hey, a guy like me doing this, that she said, she knew that I could add something for her team, and brought me in to do that, to address some of the feelings that come with playing sports and how it's hard and things they want to develop and helping them. As I said, the way that coaching works, it helps them understand each other better. And it is one of the coolest, most proud coaching moments I have done since I've started doing this coaching in this last 3 years is I've got it. You know, I've got a picture they sent me of the team that I worked with, and it's got their record and it's got that slogan on there, that hard work is our flex. And that thing is, again, it's in their locker room. It's on their t-shirts. It's been there for 3 years now. And it's something they believe in and grow in. And to have that come from a coaching session is so powerful. It helps them understand not just that these are words on a shirt, but it stands for what we believe and the value we have together in this program. And as I've got on my, you know, over my shoulder over here, like belief is huge, right? Belief is everything. It's the foundation for human motivation and success. You have to believe if you want to do these things. But I think what coaching helps players do is helps them what to focus on to believe, right? You have to believe in specific things that are true to be able to move forward. And so these girls know they put the hard work in. They love to flex it, right? So that's where that came from, is the idea that, hey, we want to flaunt to this a little bit. Like, we're good, and this is coming from this, from all this hard work. And they believe that, and they just exemplify that so much. And it's so cool to see. Just a couple things you see in there. And I, you know, honestly, I brought Coach Nightingale on because she's a great coach, a great fan, but she's used a couple of my services and just loves it. So I do the team coaching I did with her team, and I've done that with a lot of teams since. So much fun to go in and work with teams, to help them develop and learn things about each other. We talk about how team cancers can break out teams. We talk about the way that, you know, our negative voices and they start to realize that, hey, I'm not the only one who beats myself up. And we do things like that. And we do the experiential values. And there's so many cool exercises I do with teams that are really, really cool. But then also, Coach Nightingale has done some of the professional development I do with coaches. I do a couple different types of professional development with coaches. If you are a coach in a school system and, you know, you kind of get tired of all the PD being, and you have to have PD for subject matters and, you know, math, science, and all those teachers. And I get it. And there's some really good stuff. And I do some of that stuff too, but I really developed some professional development for coaches on purpose because it's so cool to have coaches, you know, in a session that they're like, hey, this is for us, helping us better understand athletes and how to develop that mental toughness in athletes and how to make them. Most coaches I talk to, they say, this is not about basketball. It's not about football. It's not about baseball. It's not about softball. It's about them, like, you know, helping kids in life. And that's what this professional development I do is helping use athletics to help kids better prepare for life and gain that mental toughness they're going to need for life. And it's just so much fun. So you listen to this, you listen to Coach Nightingale, and you're like, and you're a coach, and you're like, hey, this seems like cool stuff. Hit me up. I'd love to help. Love to work with your school. Love to work with your team. You know, your coaches. I'd love it. So yeah, as always, don't forget, like, share, subscribe, the Mental Metal Podcast. Make sure to get it out there. I love sharing all this information. So as always, I'm your host, Coach Matt Toman. This has been the Mental Metal Podcast. And always remember, forge your metal.
Thanks again for listening to the Mental Metal Podcast, produced by Coraggio Media, sponsored by QuickCut, a video management platform for every level of play, and by Mental Metal Coaching, helping athletes learn to face adversity in a spirited and resilient way. The Mental Metal Podcast is created each week to help players develop more mental toughness, and that is something that will help all of us. So help me out and like and share the Mental Metal Podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep forging your metal.